All right. Good morning and welcome back to Intrepid Radio. I am your host, Todd Schnick. Really looking forward to this conversation. One of my favorite bloggers is a gentleman named Fred Wilson. And he mentioned this book that he participated in and was reading and really thought it was a solid read. So I was getting ready to fly. So I had a couple hour flight. So I downloaded the book on my iPhone and read the darn thing on the plane. Great read. Now, a few weeks later, someone from her team caught mention on my website that I had read the book and offered to connect the author and I to have a conversation around the book, and that was really exciting. I'm looking forward to it. So say hello to Dana R.D. She is a corporate anthropologist and the author of the book, The Fall of the Alphas. Dana, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Todd. Thank you.
Oh, it's good to have you. Thanks for carving out some time to join me. I'm anxious to connect and get to know you a little bit. Before we get into a conversation around the book, take a few seconds, walk us through a little bit about you and your background and what the heck is a corporate anthropologist?
So let's start there. So my background is I'm a doctor of psychology and education. And I spend my time studying and understanding, diagnosing and helping organizations. Corporate anthropology is a phrase that I coined, which looks at the study of organizations, company cultures, mores, values, how people communicate in organizations and teams. It looks at diversity, it looks at physical space, looks at roles and responsibility. You know, consider me someone like if Margaret Mead went into a community that she didn't understand what was going on and she wanted to really study the people and their customs. That's the way I approach organizations. Every organization is different, how they're organized, how they accomplish initiatives, how people relate to each other, the social graph in organization, who are the influencers, who make a difference. And so when I do my work with companies, the first thing I do is I go in and I study and assess the organization. And it's really interesting when you hold a mirror to companies because they all want to tell me about how they are, but my observations in many instances are very different than the stories that are being told by the chief executives or the management team.
Yeah, what I guess you mean by that is everybody thinks they're betas, but they're really alphas, right?
Right. Well, they think that it is a culture, or at least many of them believe that is a culture that really provides people with the best opportunity to become all they're capable of becoming.
Right.
But
right.
In fact, organizations have many items that occur either through people's personality or the way they're organized or things in the culture that block people from actually doing their best work.
Got it. All right. So the book is called The Fall of the Alphas. So why did you have to write this book? Lord knows we didn't need another business book, but why was this so important for you to do? And what the heck is an alpha?
So this book came out of my work with many, many individuals who would come to my office for counseling. And they'd say, hey, Dr. D, we're looking for a new opportunity. Help us find a new job. And when I asked them what about their current situation made them unhappy, you know, they started to not talk about the work, the quality of the work, the kinds of responsibilities they have, their competencies vis-a-vis the opportunities. But they always talked about there was somebody on top of them. There was somebody in the political system. There was someone in the culture that was not allowing them to have a seat at the table or voice their opinion or put them in a place where they felt like they were part of the team rather than taking orders. You know, yesterday there was a big movement by Sheryl Sandberg and her group to get the word bossy out of the lexicon. You know, the word boss, they were being bossed around. That's what I heard. And when I looked into it, I realized that American business today was really a tale of two cultures. The alpha culture being defined as very bureaucratic, very traditional, centralized, hierarchical. It was like a pyramid based on the military model. You know, information started at the top. It wasn't transparent. They only filtered down what they wanted to the troops, if you will, or to the team. It was very secretive. Compensation went to the top, not to the bottom. It was not an equal distribution of responsibility, opportunity, and compensation. And then I was spending a lot of time in new economy companies and companies that were bigger companies that were really part of this, what I call the human rights movement, that really embraced diversity, that was smaller, that were more decentralized. So rather than this alpha military model, that were more like an orchestra, where there was a leader, and the leader was for every project, for every situation within the company, was putting together these creative teams, which were very collaborative. There was a more inclusive attitude. There was more open and transparent communication. And there was more equal distribution of rewards. And I called those companies beta. And when I started to look at people's happiness at work, people's fulfillment, productivity, I realized that the next generation that was coming up, they were demanding these open systems, these more collaborative ways of doing things. You know, young people today, they make every decision on social media. They crowdsource their friends for ideas. They decide with e-pinions, and they use tools like Yelp and Yammer to communicate. And so to try and close that down and silo people and not encourage collaboration just doesn't work anymore. Big companies are just not attracting the brightest and the best from the next generation. And so I decided to tell the tale of the alpha and beta cultures and to have people generate this awareness that things are changing and that the beta model is something that is very good leadership. And I tried to sort of give some keys of how to unlock that in your team.
All right, so Dana, walk me through how this evolution occurred. I think about my father, who had a very, very successful corporate career and doesn't even begin to understand the world that I live in now. You no longer start with an organization out of college and retire 40 years later with a gold watch. I think we're now more in this project-based career path. But how did this actually happen? Was it a result of the dawn of the information age and this rapid technological change?
Yes, well, that has a lot to do with it. But let's look at the social movements first. Things are changing socially, culturally, globally, digitally, and across generations. So those are all the factors that we have to take into consideration. So first and foremost, it's the whole women's rights, gay rights, self-awareness generation. People started to say, we want happiness, we want emotional connection with the jobs we have, we want to have a voice in the table, we want to be participants in the action. So that's first and foremost. Diversity of thought, diversity across the generations. Then technology was an enabler. Also, global business. Business has become very complicated. We have global enterprises now. It's not just domestic. We build businesses through ecosystems with lots of other companies around us that are all participating, which allows for collaboration. So the idea that we have to collaborate, the idea that we have to work with colleagues in other parts of the world, we have to work with colleagues across companies who are suppliers or customers, that's all part of what's happening in the social cultural fiber. So technology, yes, but all of these other human factors also contributed. Lots of megatrends that came together for this moment.
Yeah, it was a perfect storm. Those movements coupled with the ease of technical communication probably really, really provided the groundswell for this. So let's talk a little bit more in depth about the beta culture. The core tenets of it is communication, collaboration, and that self-awareness you just mentioned. Go a little deeper on what a beta culture really looks like.
So, you know, if you think about it, no one company could afford to have all the great thinkers that they need to have on their payroll. And so, you know, for example, Eli Lilly has started to open source some of their research and development. And they've started to say, hey, here's where we are in the research. Let the best scientists in the world advance the thinking, and we'll give a prize to whoever comes up with the next iteration of this pharmaceutical research. That's an amazing idea of saying, we don't have all the answers. We can only do what we could do, but we're going to try and go out in the world and find the best and the brightest and put them together to try and solve a problem. And we're seeing that every day. We're seeing that with lots of other things, from Kickstarter, where people are coming together to fund interesting areas of opportunity, to internal intranets, where companies are starting to say, as part of Beta Cultures, we have great thinkers. Forget what they're called. They could be VP of marketing, VP of technology, but we have people who have competencies, and we have some things that we need to strategize about or think or solve. So why don't we put together these teams, these beta teams within our organization, where they can come together, not because of title, cross borders, cross disciplines, to really be part of this community and enhance the community thinking. It's this kind of collaboration that's becoming the norm. And what we're seeing, and I just wrote this article for Fast Company called The Future of Work, and what we'll see in the future of work is more and more of these companies, individuals, will be in small project teams, and they'll be hired by bigger organizations for run-of-the-contract competencies, meaning they'll have limited contracts, they'll be given a problem to solve, they'll be given some opportunity to enhance what the company needs them to do. They'll be in there, they'll be incented for that work, and then they'll be out of there. And so we see that as a trend coming forward.
And I think it's a glorious trend. I'm intrigued by this idea that you talk about in the book about curators, not commanders. I've written myself about how curation is a sales strategy. Your take on it is obviously different, but I think the whole notion of curation is taking greater meaning in modern business. Talk about that idea of curators, not commanders.
Well, if you believe my premise that hierarchies are being replaced by networks, then the new kind of beta leadership really becomes part of what I call curation. And curation is that beta leaders need to collect, sort, analyze data, edit communications, build collaborative streams of information, and put people together in different ways to solve and assemble employees to solve problems. They encourage new thinking. It's very innovative. But just like if you go to a museum and you see one painting, you say, that's a lovely painting. But if you see it in its historical context, if you see it next to the body of the work of the artist, if you see it juxtaposed towards other artists in their generation, the entire story becomes bigger than that one painting. And that's what we mean by curation, by taking employees and putting them together to inspire each other, to work together, to come together from different disciplines, to innovate, to be creative, to think through opportunity, to create solutions. The community becomes, or the tribe, if you will, is so much bigger than any individual. And the leader, the new beta leader, really has to understand that, has to be able to know their team, understand how to put together people in interesting ways. And I call that curation.
You know, the way you described that, Dana, really, really spoke to me. I mean, are you suggesting that from here on forward, the HR department ought to be curating in terms of their recruiting strategy? I mean, that's kind of what it sounds like you said. And I think it's brilliant.
I am a big believer, Todd, in a couple of different things when it comes to what I call human capital. First of all, I think organizations have to create human capital maps. They have to understand who's in the organization, who are the connectors, who are the influencers, and how to bring people together around some of these collaborations we're talking about. The people in human resources have to really be the glue of this beta culture. And they have to recruit people that are self-aware, that have managed egos, that can play in a different sandbox, that aren't looking for status and power, but that really are looking for community and fulfillment. And they're still ambitious, they're still motivated, they still have ego. We all have ego, but their egos are in check. It's what I call team ego. It's the ability to play effectively with other people. It's that kind of leadership. And I even go so far as to suggest that a rotation in the human resources area is really important for very high potential executives in your organization, because that skill of understanding how to manage talent, how to bring people together, how to effectively and openly communicate with the team, all the things that really are business partners to the organization, is a really important skill for anybody in line for succession for a leadership position in companies. So I can advocate it as a development opportunity for high potentials.
All right. I want to go back and I want to sum up very succinctly the difference between the alphas and the betas for my audience. And I'd like you to do it in the context of this. And you mentioned this at the top of the show, but explain the difference between the general and his army and the conductor of a symphony.
So, you know, the alpha culture came out of the World War II paradigm. And in my book, I go through the history of organizations and how we came together in groups at work. And so when I talk about the alpha culture, it really came into prevalence when people came home from World War II. And they were, it was a top-down model. It was a pyramid model. It was a hierarchical model. It's a hierarchy. So there's a general at top, that's the CEO. And then from there, there's lieutenants, there's sergeants, all the way down to the privates. And there's a chain of command. What's really interesting, Todd, is when I started my research, I actually went to West Point and started to talk to the thought leaders there. And they said to me, hey, things are even changing in the military. The kinds of altercations we fight now really have to do with collaborative teams going out in the field. And so we're teaching our leaders now to use their judgment and exercise their judgment in the field. We can't move armies the way we used to in World War II. And leadership, we see leadership as a changing paradigm. It's people being attached to their communities, attached to their teams, and working together very effectively, making quick decisions. So that goes to my next point, which is, what is beta? Beta is like an orchestra. There's a leader, and by no means do I mean that the betas don't have leaders. There are leaders. Leadership is actually, it's a little messier, but it's much harder to be a beta leader because you really have to check your ego at the door. It's no longer about what you know. It's about how to mine your community for the best talents. And that's what an orchestra leader does. They have a piece of music. They look at the first chair playing the violin. They put together a team of violinists. And then they say, for this piece of music, we need a tuba. So we need the best tuba player. And they start to put together a team from the orchestra. And then they conduct. And the conductor really starts to make sure that people are playing in sync. And that's my point. Beta organizations really have people that are coming together that feel a loyalty to the community, that put their best work effort forward, and really collaborate in a way where they do what's in the best interest of the entire team.
It's fascinating that you say that a military is even evolving to this beta model. I mean, I'm thinking, if I'm a military, if I'm an army, and I'm required to take a hill or advance on a beachhead and kill the enemy, that the alpha model makes sense. But you're right. In the changing warfare of modern times, I can understand where the collaborative side of this thing becomes to make a little bit more sense. All right. So, Dan, I have a friend who always says to me, people don't change. People don't change. It's in the context of when a mutual friend of ours, you know, says, oh, I'm going to do something different this time, and ends up falling back on old patterns. She always says, people don't change. So let's say I'm some CEO and I read this book and I say, you know what? I want to make an evolution to this beta culture. It makes a lot of sense to me. My people seem to be unhappy. They dread coming to work. How can an organization, or let me ask it this way, can an organization that has got deep roots in the alpha way of doing things, can they evolve? Can they change? And how?
Yep. Well, let's put it this way. Things change, people change, environments change, and change doesn't happen quickly. And it doesn't happen systematically. But yes, I believe in change and I believe organizations will change. In fact, if you look at the original Fortune 500 from from the 1970s. Only 71 companies still remain. So there are a lot of companies that don't evolve and don't change disappear. And we can see that today. We can see companies, you know, we can name companies that are disappearing because they didn't evolve. They were just myopic. They didn't embrace change. They didn't embrace new products, new opportunities, new services. And so how do you manage this change? Well, I was counseling one CEO and he said, I like this beta culture. I think we need to embrace it. I'm going to put out a memo and mandate it. I said, no, that's not how you do it. You know, that's exactly the antithesis of what I'm talking about. What you need to do is it's top down and bottom up. You need to empower people. You need to give people the opportunity to work in smaller project teams. You need to create awareness. You need to create sponsorship and mentorship programs throughout the organization. You need to come up with a collective mission and value statement, and then you need to repeat it and live it and really embrace it. So it doesn't happen all at once. It happens because you start to hire people who believe, who want to evolve. You start to give people voices at the table. You start to be something as simple as being more open and honest in your communication. Something as simple as starting to, you know, create the stories of success within the organization. I just worked with a large company that wanted to go through a transition. And over 18 months, we brought together the top thought leaders, the heads of HR from around the world, and the heads of engineering from around the world. So we picked three distinct groups in the organization and put them all through a change or transformational experience. And then during the year, we supported them all to work together to help to create and implement that change. And then 18 months later, we brought them all together. And the changes that happened in the company, the new recruits that they were able to attract, the products that they were able to engineer were just astounding. There was so much creativity. And more importantly, everybody agreed when we did employee satisfaction studies that they were happier, they were more productive, they felt like there was more possibilities, and they felt a stronger loyalty to the company. So again, it doesn't come easy. It really works on several different fronts, top down, bottom up. It's a willingness of the culture to buy into new collective values, and it really takes leadership to turn the ship around.
All right. On that note, Dan, I hate to say it, we're about out of time. Before I let you go, how can people get in touch with you? And more importantly, where can they get their hands on The Fall of the Alphas?
So the book is available in all your traditional outlets through Amazon, both on Kindle and in book form, Barnes & Noble's, CEO Reads. They can find me on my website, which is corporateanthropologyadvisors.com. And I really like when people read the book and reach out to me. And what's interesting, Todd, is the biggest adventure of writing this book is I'm really learning, and I'm learning about how many companies there are out there and how many individuals out there that are very excited about their opportunity to collaborate with others and really feel like American business is moving in the right direction, and you know, but not just in the technology sector, but in all sorts of innovative ways, we are tackling some of the things that we need to tackle as a society through people putting their heads together and working hard together.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm optimistic that the ideas of curation and collaboration and empowering the people are taking root. So it's very exciting. And on behalf of my audience, I thank you for writing this book. It was really impactful for us. So, all right. Well, that wraps this show. My guest was Dana R.D. She's a corporate anthropologist and the author of The Fall of the Alphas. Dana, real pleasure to talk. Thanks for joining
me. Thank you so much. Thanks for the time today.
All right. Well, that wraps this episode. Again, on behalf of my guest, Dana R.D., I'm Todd Schneck. Intrepid Radio will return soon. What you want? What you want?
You've been
listening to Intrepid Radio, hosted by me, Todd Schnick. You can find the show at intrepidradioshow.com. If you enjoyed the broadcast, kindly leave a rating and review on iTunes. Until next time, stay bold, and I'll see you soon on the Intrepid Radio Show.